So the Gemara, I didn't have mine, so I just have one here. So the Gemara, it's on page Chaf Bey, is in the book. So the Gemara says like this. It's a Gemara in Brachos Ches Amar Aleph. Amar Rav Shimon ben Yochai. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu. God says, Kol ha'osik b'Torah, anyone who is osik, involved in Torah, u'v'gmil chasadim, and gmil chasad, l'spalel im ha'tzibor, shachars min chavarvis, and dive into the tzibor for shachars min chavarv, ma'ila ani alav, God says, I consider it on him, ki ilu pada li u'lebanai, it's as if he redeemed me and my sons, my children, mi'ben humos olam, from amongst the nations of the world. Okay, so you do these three things, God considers it as if you redeemed him and his sons, his children from the world. Okay, that's a good one.
Just wondering, when is the halacha of davening b'tzibur, or the minhag, come about? Because it's not a straight halacha. I mean, it's not a mitzvah. You know, it's something nice to do.
Right. Well, it's machlokas whether you have to or don't have to, for men at least. But,
really?
Yeah, some say you have to. I mean, I think we hold that you don't have to, but it's like tefillah. I mean, the phenomenon of tefillah as a tzibur is like, I think, a deraisa phenomenon. Just a question of whether you chayev to do all your tefillahs in that form. But the idea of like the tzibur of Klal Yisrael being involved in a group tefillah, I think, is an idea. You know, there's like Klal Yisrael, like on a fast day, cries out in tefillah. You know.
Okay, so it's not actually talking about going to Shul and Davening.
Oh no, I think this is. What I'm just saying is the institution of Tefillah B'Tzibur isn't something that was made up. The obligation or the, you know, that's like a kiyum or, you know, or
okay,
arguably a kiyum. But so that it's a good idea, like the Rambam says, Tefillah B'Tzibur Nishmas Tamid. You know, there's like a reality of a Tefillah B'Tzibur as opposed to just an individual asking on their own behalf. There's an idea of the Tzibur. You're joined together with the tzibur and you're asking as part of a larger unit. It gives you a certain sense of humility that you're, you know, that you as an individual are not that significant, but you're part of a group which has a greater significance. I mean, there are different ideas about it. Yeah. Okay. So, what do you guys think about this Gemara? Any questions?
What's the relationship between these three things?
Okay, so what's the three things, right? They sound like a random assortment of things. Okay. Any other questions?
How is it like possible we're ever going to be redeeming God? Like, in what
right.
sense does God require right. redemption?
Right. What does that mean? Doesn't sound sounds like fear almost, right? Like
yeah,
God
like
is in, yeah, as if God is in captivity and He has to be redeemed by us. Like we're going to help God out and help redeem Him. That's ridiculous, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Doesn't make sense. God needs redemption, right? People who are enslaved by some masters need redemption, but what does that mean? We're going to redeem God. Right? And redeem God and his nation. That's also interesting, you know? From the Umos Olam. As if the Umos Olam, or the Romans, or the Greeks, or whoever, are enslaving God. That's what it sounds like, you know? After you're doing these mitzvahs, you're like helping God out. You know, that's what it sounds like. I mean, the straight pshat in this chazal sounds. And this is what people, this is a very common thing nowadays. And on this exact form. But we're helping God out, we're doing the mitzvahs, we're giving him nachas, or whatever, you know, things like that, you know. Somehow, like, they personify God in a way that he's in need of our tefillahs, kind of thing, you know.
Well, also, it sounds very, like, Christian in a way that, like, Jesus was
right.
redeemed because of the style of his death, and that you can be redeemed through him.
Yeah, right, it's true. It's true, I mean, we hold God as above, he's the creator, he doesn't need anybody or anything. And you can't be enslaved by anybody. So the whole idea sounds like it doesn't really make sense. To redeem Klal Yisrael from amongst the nations, that makes sense because we're a nation and we can be enslaved. But say God is enslaved, redeemed seems to be off, right?
Yeah.
So there's two parts: these three things, and then this thing. What's the three things? What's how could you redeem God, and what's the connection? How do these three things lead to that? Right. Okay, good. Any other problems? Good problems, right?
I think
you're doing
it
one more time. Read it?
Yes.
Okay. Amar Rav Shimon Yochai. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kol ha'usik b'Torah uv'gmilas chasadim uv'mispalel ematzibur shachar zmincha v'barves Maila ani alav. I consider it on him. Ki ilu padali ulabanai mi ben humasalam.
So what's
OC Pesach?
That's just learning?
I guess so. I'll say the Torah. Involved in learning. Not just
that's
like,
not
you know,
like an umbrella phrase that I can really include the other two.
Yes, I think it means learning Torah. I don't think it means like, yeah, doing everything is involved in Torah. I think Osek is like Lasek with the Torah. It's a bracha. It's a bracha when you learn, right? And Osek can be also Southern, presumably, means, you know. So, how would you approach this? We're going to read the Rashba, but maybe first see if we could, you know, see what we could do on our own. How do you think you would, if you have these problems, so how do you think you would approach the problem? What should we think about?
Well, when you say redeeming God, we know that God exists. We believe in God. Everybody else does.
Okay.
So, who's this referring to? Could be referring to, you know, making God known and publicizing to everyone else.
Okay. Okay, good. Hold your thought. Good thought. My question is even prior to that, is how should we approach the problem? Like, you're giving an answer, which is
right.
Good. My question is, how should we approach it? And maybe they are giving a good approach, but sometimes you have to problem solving a problem is to approach it properly. So
I
have
also say like that you should approach it by trying to find some creative way by which God or God's ideas really are, like,
right,
held hostage by the nation or
something, right? And it seems there's two parts of this as well. There's these three things. And then there's this idea of God, redeeming God, right? So, naturally, it seems there's two ways to go. You could try to think about the three things. You could think about God being redeemed, right? I mean, just, right, where else are you going to go? There's each of them separately and the connection between the two, right? So, it seems that those are the two paths. So, now, why are you going towards that as opposed to the... that would be just a question. I mean, it's a matter of taste, but why do you think that's a better route to go than just to try to think about the three things? Right, because that's the route you're both going on.
Right.
I don't know if you're going to find a connection between those three random things unless it's by way of the solution.
Right. Very good. I mean, three things is right, exactly. I mean, you can make up anything. I mean, three things, they're just three things. I mean, sure, you could come up with 10 different ways to summarize what those three things are. They're pretty generic types of things, right? Torah, Vodog, Milch, Chassad. I mean, they're right, they're very, very standard kinds of things. So... it doesn't seem like you're going to gain much insight into the Chazal by just trying to sit back and try to think what's common to these three things. You know, it's too open-ended a question. Kind of. It's not going to guide you towards any direction. But here you have it's just like what's in common between the three things. It's not even really a problem. It's just what's common. But like this other thing is really a problem. It doesn't make sense to say God is redeemed, right? So, like, and you have and it's a very directed question. It must mean something. It can't mean what it sounds like. It must mean something. So that's, like, often much easier to approach a problem when you have, like, a question, a problem, than just the curiosity, what's common between these three things, you know? A question directs you kind of towards an answer, as opposed to, like, an open-ended type of thing. It's just, you know, you don't really have a direction. So I think it's important, you know, sometimes you approach a problem, not necessarily to jump to the answer right away, because sometimes you jump right, sometimes you jump wrong. First,
right.
Just take a step back and think, what's the right, what's the better way to approach the problem? You know, because oftentimes method of approaching a problem is as important as coming up with a good solution. You know, it puts you in the right way to think about the problem. So with that being said, so that's what you're trying to address. So again,
right. So like, how to understand the correlation? So
well, correlation between the three and this, or just.
Well,
what,
no, that,
what does it mean?
Step,
oh, okay. What does it mean?
Correlation
between?
Between the three things. And
oh. Okay, I'm saying I think even before that. I think there's even prior to understanding the correlation is a simpler question. Okay, what does it mean that God is that you're redeeming God? Like, what is that
okay.
Even? What is it even? How could it be? How is it possible? What does it mean? Once we get an idea of what it means, then we could say, okay, what are these three things and how do they tie into that? You know what I mean? But so take it step by step, you know? Okay, so what does it mean to... You're answering that also. So what does it mean to redeem God? So repeat what you're saying?
To make God known to everybody else.
Okay. So you mean he's, so to speak, enslaved when the world doesn't know about him.
Well, I don't think that redeemed has to be referring to enslaved. necessarily. That's the other thing. I think redeem, you know, just, you know, to...
Does you're redeeming him and his children. What? So you're redeemed from a state of some sort of a... Right? Doesn't redeem have like an opposite or a state which you're redeeming from? I don't know if it's a slavery, but I mean, the term is usually used. It says you're redeeming him and his son, his children, from the Masalam. So his children being under the Masalam presumably means like we're somehow under them and we're being redeemed. So it sounds like, I mean, it's a mashal, but in the mashal it sounds like it's saying his God is somehow under the Masalam. And now he's being redeemed from that captivity, whatever it is. Your thing is the world doesn't know about God.
Right.
So in that sense, in a certain sense, he's, I guess, subdued by the world.
Right, we're being, you know, being like an unknown concept
set
and turning light on it.
Right, he's unknown, and what is known in his place?
All
types of other philosophies, ideologies, religions, right? So he's, so to speak, subdued by the world's ideas and philosophies and religions, right? He's put under wraps. God is denied and undermined and all that. Without really, God is, doesn't need anybody. He is what he is. But in the eyes of the world, insofar as the name of God being known, he's, so to speak, in captivity, right? If Kais, and it's interesting, it's tied in with Kais. Why is it tied in? It's saying we redeem him and Ka and his nation and his sons. What do you think
as
it's saying?
As this is the case, then Judaism just looks like ridiculous and...
Okay. You mean if God is undermined, then God and Judaism is undermined.
Yeah.
Okay. A different answer for that? That's one way to look at it.
Right.
Of what the connection between saying God and his nation is subdued. So you're saying is that if the God is subdued, then his nation is subdued, because the Jews don't really have any grounding, right? Is the opposite also the case? That if Klai Yisrael is subdued, then somehow God is subdued?
Yeah.
Okay, how so?
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, because we... I guess we represent God, so to speak.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, without us, there is no connection from the Goyim to God.
Right.
We're that...
Right.
We'll stop.
Right. Right. That's what Klai Yisrael has chosen us. The idea of Sinai was to set up a nation which will teach the world about God, which will reflect the Derech Hashem, right? That we are the nation, which is like a segula, yisem li segula mikol avim, you know, we're the chosen nation, and nations of the world will say, we say Nashana davening, Yomar kol Hashem Hashemah me'apo, well, everyone who has breath in his nostrils will say, Hashem Elokei Yisrael melech, Hashem Elokei Yisrael, right? It's the God of Yisrael. The way the world sees God, the world isn't philosophers. Right? The way the world, God's plan for the world sees God through Klal Yisrael. We live a life of morality and a life of chachma, and the nations will say, wow, look at this wise and discerning nation, and they'll see, they'll know about, they know about God through the model of the Jewish people. And as far as the Jews are subdued, then God is subdued. They don't have the Jews downtrodden in Galus, and the world saying, wow, God of the Jews, he's unbelievable. It just doesn't work that way. It's on the opposite. Is they look at the Jews, they kill the Jews, and they're God. That's the insofar as the Jews are uplifted and proper, living properly, and then, you know, success, so then God is a force to be reckoned with. Right? So they go hand in hand. Right? So and that's the way that the world destroys God or attacks God, is through attacking his people. You know, they kind of undermine God and they forget about him through the people. The Jews are a reminder about the true idea of God. So I think they're both true. So you're saying it's true that if you deny God, then the Jews look like silly. But I think even like more directly is through the Jews being undermined and in Galus, God, the Shem Hashem, is also, you know, undermined. And that's part of the tragedy of the Korban. fact that we don't know the Mikdash is that we don't know the Shem Hashem, the world at large doesn't know about God, and that's why in Rosh Hashanah davening we're always davening for Malchus, you know, and that's through our redemption, through our bringing Chai Yisrael, the ultimate, you know, V'chein Tein Pachtecha and V'chein Tzadikim and Chai Yisrael, you know, all those V'cheins, through Chai Yisrael, you know, having the success and God protecting them, the world will see God and God's Malchus will be set. I mean, that's what happened at Sinai. I mean, before Sinai, there wasn't really a plan for the world at large. I mean, there are individuals who would be like Avraham Avinu and what is his individual followers. But Sinai, God set up a plan for the world to know God. And that was through the system of Tayag Mitzvos and Am Yisrael. And a nation is like, makes it on the map. And the world knows about a nation. Individuals are just individuals and they kind of come and go. Okay. So the idea of redeeming God and his sons somehow has to do with the fact that insofar as there is Galus and there is the Jew being downtrodden, so there is not only the Jew being downtrodden, but the Shem Hashem being downtrodden in the eyes of people, of course. Not in reality, but in the eyes of people. Okay, good. Okay, so now where do we go from here? Or what should we pursue now, without giving an answer? But what's our next? What should be our next line of thinking?
Try to understand what types of things could cause this reality to be shifted.
Mm-hmm. Right. It seems somehow that this is saying, now we know what this is talking about. If you do these things, then you will. It's as if God considers it as if you are redeeming, you know, redeeming him and his sons. So it seems like there's some sort of a connection between doing these things and redeeming God. Right? So the question is, what is that?
Just back to the methodology.
Yes.
We're just really using our intuition to discover the meaning of the part about redeeming God.
Yes.
And I mean, we're the ones thinking about it, and this is our intuition, so of course it sounds right and seems to fit. But like, how would you know if it wasn't accurate?
If it what?
If it wasn't accurate.
Well, you wouldn't necessarily know. But I mean, you have to see the different parts of the Chazal. For instance, one thing is there are other parts of the thing, so hopefully it should all fit together. But, I mean, you have to go with steps and then see and be willing to question your premises if it doesn't work out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You don't know for sure, but at least if you're following the good steps, you're much more likely to be on, you know, the right path, you know?
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to just kind of sitting back and just popping out an answer. You know what I mean? But you're right. I mean, you never know, you know. You never know for sure, but as pieces of a puzzle kind of fit into place, you know, you follow good clues, and then, you know, sometimes you can have something which could disprove you or could be tested. Or you could look at the Rashba, that's what he says. But you don't always have that, you know. But I mean, that's part of the idea of using the methodology, is trying to avoid mistakes like that. You never could, you'll never be free from a wrong shot.
Right.
But at least if your thinking is guided in a step-by-step method, then you're much more likely than, you know, if you just like kind of go with whatever idea pops into your head. You know, how do you get there? Where did it come from? You know, you can just be making up something.
Right.
But if you kind of follow a good logical, follow the clues, there are always clues and steps and the right, you know, follow a logical progression of the problems to work out. You know, so then, like now for instance, I don't know if we're going to get an answer in this route, but at least now we have a route to think about the three things. How do these three things lead to redeeming this idea of making God's name known or something like that, you know?
Right.
As opposed to just, if we would have just sat back and think about three things, what's in common about those three things, we could have made up anything, you know? About redeeming God, we don't know what redeeming God means, so we just make up anything and then just try to shove that into redeeming God, and it's like, you know? Redeeming God, it's almost like, also, like, what else could it mean? You know, it's like, I think we're kind of explaining, it can't mean we're actually redeeming God, that doesn't make any sense, so it must mean that there's in some sort of apparent way God is not redeemed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it seems like a pretty good solid step, and this is what it means, you know?
Yeah.
And there are other steps that you take sometimes which are not as solid, but kind of think about it. What else could, you know? It's a mashal, you know, that's what it, you know, points to. I think the harder part is going out to these things, because it's still three random things. And the question is, in general, what could we do to, you know, make the Shem Hashem, you know, like, right, what's the root which we have?
What about, first of all, like, these three things, they're all what identify us as Jews. That's okay. What we stand for. So it's really just following Torah and doing mitzvah kind of thing. But could it be because, basically, we're always influenced by the Goyim.
Okay.
Right? So, you know, if the Goyim, you know, we want to be like the Goyim, you know, that was always our fate.
Right.
But, like, these things, you know, when you're following Torah, that keeps you in check.
Uh-huh.
So that, you know, takes away from being the Goyim. You do your thing, and in doing so, you bring down the, you know, representation of God.
Right, I understand. If we keep our identity, follow our values, stick to our ideals, and we set ourselves up as a distinct nation.
Right.
And then what happens? Then is it that somehow naturally now we become, God's name becomes known, or does it mean then God will protect us and God will give us, you know, reward us or something? Like, which, what are you, right, those are kind of two different ways of going here. Like, that naturally somehow by doing these things now we're bringing up Shem Hashem. Or you could look at it as that since we're doing these things, we'll be rewarded because now we're living in line with Torah, and then we're going to get the brachos, and then God's going to, you know, bring us, redeem us.
And, huh? When you last class said among the three, causes me to want to say that it has to do with, like, some kind of natural consequence that would result from the non-Jews observing our behavior. But that would happen on its own, not from an act of hashkacha. Also, he doesn't really say anything about it.
But this God says, like, consider it as if you did this. It doesn't really say it leads to it either. It's a funny kind of thing altogether. God says, like, consider it as if he redeemed me and my children from.
Hmm.
Yeah. Kind of could go either way, I would think, you know?
Right.
So it's a little bit vague, like, what that means exactly.
Right. It's almost like saying it's not really
going to
have a true cost.
Right, it almost points to, like, I'll consider it like that, and it's going in that direction, and then maybe God will consider it like that and do something about it. Points, if anything, towards that, right?
Yeah. But also, if God could just do something about it, then why does he have to... Doesn't he ask to do anything?
Okay. That's a good question. If God could just... This is an important question. God could just change things, so what does he need us for? Okay, so that's a good question. There's an answer to that, I think.
Does it have anything to do with us being an ideological nation?
An ideological nation?
Yeah, as opposed to... Like, that's...
Right.
We are our ideology.
Okay, good, and therefore?
And therefore... I guess, you know, like, external things can't break your ideology.
Can't what?
Can't break your ideology.
Okay.
And...
Are you answering Micheli's question or the other question? Just the Stam question.
Just...
Oh. Okay. Right.
Yeah.
I hear what you're saying. How about, let's pursue Micheli's question. I think it's a good one. Maybe it'll help us. I think your approach is helping would help with that also, but the question is, if you're saying it means God's going to do something, so let God just do it. Right? Let him just do it now. What's he need us for? Right? What does he need us for? Right, you're saying if it's a natural thing, fine, but if it means God's going to reward us, so then let him just do it. Let him just, right? Who needs us to do anything? Who needs to discover, learning?
Maybe it's because, like, although we have a promise that eventually God will bring Mashiach and turn, you know, the world in the right direction, it's not really known when that's going to happen. So, and it can happen, so to speak, at any time. If we behave in a particular way that deserves, that in its own right is heading in the right direction, then maybe, it's like there's a famous Rashi that quotes a Chazal, that when you start along the right way,
right,
God helps you. I forget the words.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So then,
right,
like, once we show ourselves to be deserving of,
right,
a turnaround, the world, so to speak, and for the world to know God, then,
right,
God will actually step in and help out the process.
Okay. Right. How will the world know about God? What's God going to do, so to speak? Okay, Beis Mikdash. Good. So now let's say we don't do these things. We don't do these three things. We just, you know, are sinners. And now God brings us to the Beis Mikdash. Is it going to work?
No.
No, why not?
Because the Beis Mikdash is only going to help you, so it's already there. It's going to help to improve it.
Okay.
But once you have that basis.
Okay, good.
And that, you know, you want to connect with God.
Okay, good.
The Beis Mikdash isn't going to mean anything to you.
Okay. So what will the world then see?
Will then see that we don't really care. And, you know,
that
we're not going to represent God.
Right. I mean, if we have a Beis Mikdash and we're still corrupt, you know, and God's giving us all this great stuff and we're still corrupt, the world's going to learn bad things.
That's
right? If you reward the bad kid in the class, you're going to be showing everybody this is the way to behave. Right? So, if we're just going to be living corrupt, then we're going to have the Beis Mikdash and we're going to be using it for Avodah Zarah and totally, you know, bad things like they were in the time of the Churban Bayis, then God takes it away from us. Because the value of the Mikdash just doesn't work. It doesn't work to show anyone anything if we don't relate to it properly. It's totally dependent upon us having the right ideas and being a good model. Then, when God gives us success, gives us the Mikdash, gives whatever success it is, then the world sees, wow, look at this nation, this is the way to learn, and we're models. So for God to redeem us and give us all this great stuff, and then say, now we're redeemed, and now the world will know about God. The world's not going to know about God like that. I mean, they may know about a false idea of God, or some wrong idea, which we represent a bad idea about God. But for really the world to see the idea of God through God redeeming us, it's only going to work insofar as we're at a level which we could actually thrive in the Mikdash and teach true ideas in the Mikdash. You know what I mean? So what's the point? So it says, even if it is that God's going to do something, we have to be at a level for it to work. Right? But that doesn't necessarily mean that if we're at a level, then it will work without God stepping in. Because if we're downtrodden, we may be living a good life, but we're downtrodden, and the world may not look up at us and say, wow, look at this great nation. If there it is, we're totally downtrodden and beaten down. And, you know, in the middle of the Holocaust, we were like moral people. I don't know if the world would have looked at us and said, wow, look at this great nation. Because the world looks at success. You know, it looks at failure as a failure. A downtrodden nation is a downtrodden nation. No one's learning lessons and morals and anything from that nation, because they're the guys who are being beaten. Right? So we can live, even if we live properly. But if we live properly, then we're in a position where God now, if God would help us along and give us the Mikdash and give us good stuff, then we would be able to work to show the world ideas. So it's like you kind of need both, right? You need us to live properly, but at the same time you also need help from God that we could be a voice to the world. Otherwise no one's going to really learn anything from us. It could mean like as soon as God considers it, like you're doing this, means you're working towards, you're putting yourself in a position where you're leading towards redeeming God and the Kali Yisrael from the nations. Whether God will actually do it, that's God's judgment, how and when or whatever. But you're doing that. You're going in that direction. Right. And that's what I thought you were getting at. You're saying we're an ideological nation. The way we work to teach people is not just through giving us. If we're not living up with our ideology and then God gives us stuff, it doesn't do anything. We're a strong corrupt nation. That's not us. That's not the way we work. We work through our ideology. So, right. So far as the ideological Jew is successful, then yeah, the Jewish mission is upheld, and then God is known through the world. But if we don't live up to our ideology, then we don't have. And that's why I think the idea of the Chorban. We don't get military success and the Mikdash and anything if we're not living properly, because we get protection because of our ideology. If we don't live up to it, then on the contrary, the world looks at us and sees corruption and learns corruption if we would enjoy success. Right? It's like we have to have the Chorban. Now, through the Chorban, the world sees, oh, this is the corrupt way to live. That wasn't the proper way of living. The Jews were living like that. Their God punishes them because that's not God. That's not the idea. That's not the way to live. You know? So that would lead us to somehow saying these three things should be somehow the model of the Jew, what we stand for, something like that, right? Like generic things that are what Judaism stands for. Or, I mean, they sound like kind of cornerstones of, right? It would be nice if we could make
two.
Huh?
First two,
not davening and
yeah.
Well, the thing is, in davening, there's two facets. There's the davening, and then there's the with a minion three times a day, you know? It's like, it seems like the highest form of the davening could be when it's with a minion three times a day, you know? But perhaps, like, it's... The idea of tefillah is part of who we are, you know? You know, it sounds funny, that part, you know? Right? It would still be nice, I don't know if we could do it, but, like, to get what are the three things exactly, you know? Just like, is it just like the things we stand for? Like, you'd think somehow you can make a list of more than three. Now I don't really know what, but like, are these really the three things? But that's a harder kind of question, you know? Okay, so should we see the Rashba? I think we're doing pretty good. Alright, let's see what he says. I mean, you'll see, he says a lot of stuff that we're saying. Okay, but he explains it. I think he does a little better job on these three, which, you know, is noticeable, you know. It's kind of the hard part of the thing. Okay, so I'll read it. It's not that long. Let's see. Kvarkasadna. Kibiyos, so we already wrote. Kibiyos kas ovde Hashem yisparach b'shafal. When the group of the ovde Hashem are lowly, you know, shafal. Goreim l'riboy ha'kfir ha'bamim. It causes addition of kfira, of denial amongst the nations. Right? Shiroin kilu ein heichol. That's what's awesome. It seems to them as if God can't do anything. Right? Here it is, we're the nation of God, and God's powerless. Right? Like, what was he going to say? Come out of Moshe, like Moshe said in his tefillah. V'amru ha'goyim asher shemo shem ha'chalemar. V'ibilti yicholos Hashem. And that was Moshe's tefillah to God, is that the nations of the world, you see that you don't bring us into Eretz Yisrael, the Meraglim, you're going to kill us. They're going to say, oh yeah, God wasn't able to do it. That's what they're going to say. They're not going to say the Jews are chotim. They're just going to say God, the God of the Jews, is powerless. That's what they say. V'humash ha'kasav asher padisa mi'metzrayim. That's what it means. That it means that you redeemed from Mitzrayim. That you redeemed, I think there's an illusion that not only was Klai Yisrael redeemed, but God was redeemed. Because the idea is that the world saw that God was powerful. V'chsiv b'chol tzarasam lo tzar. And all the tzar, all the pain of the Jews, is a pain to him. Okay, so it means the same thing. V'amru and also Chazal say, Galu l'mitzrayim, when they went to Galus l'mitzrayim, Shechina imahem. Right, the Shechina was with them. Galu l'elam, they went to Galus l'elam, Shechina imahem. Is with them. So it means because when the Jew is downtrodden, people look at the Shekhinah as powerless. That's just the way it looks. People look at the Jewish God as being not able to save the Jew. U'kashav Hashem no shayim, when Hashem is saved, kilu hu yisparach mikol dimoy no shemam. It's as if God himself, which you can't really say this, but is saved with them. When I save my right hand, then you answer me. As if when you answer me, then when God answers me, I think it's David. Hey, David speaking. Your right hand is saved. It's as if God's saving himself. It says like as the hand is on the throne of God. Kiviyachol says if kozman shamalekayim, as long as Amalek is around, ain't a kisei shalem. Right, the crown, the throne of God is not complete, because the Amalek is the enemy of the Jew, and so far as this enemy, the ideological enemy, is present, so it's like a impinges upon the idea of the reality of God and His great grandeur and His might. The fact that our enemy is still existent. So he's saying is that our fate directly affects the Shem Hashem in the world, positive or for negative. And then he says, like, it's Ukis Yisrael Mahalchem Akava Yosher. And when Klal Yisrael goes on the proper path, we must ask him b'mash and etzdavu, and they're involved in that which they were commanded, gormim l'kimam. That causes them to continue to exist. Okay?
This is a little bit different than we were saying.
Okay, what's up?
We were saying that...
Just give me a second. One more line. U'kish'usim ha'hefech, when we do the opposite, gormim l'silak ha'shchina, we'll agalos, we have some that it causes the silak shchina and the removal from agalos. Yeah. Okay, so yes, what are you saying?
It seems like the Rosh was emphasizing like God's might, that people think that God is like not mighty and weak, and but we were emphasizing more, I think, that the idea of God cannot be known because
right, you mean we're saying is if we're downtrodden, then no one's gonna look at us.
It makes God look weak, that we he doesn't save us. He doesn't help us.
Right, and what were we saying?
I think we were saying that.
No one knows about him. No one's interested.
Yeah.
No one cares.
We're talking about the knowledge of God versus like the strength of God.
Right.
You can connect those two things by saying that obviously the idea that God is weak is false, but...
Right. Right. It could just be, he means, because like even when we're the Jews are always known. So even if we're downtrodden, people know about the Jew. But it's not a force to be reckoned with, because they say, look, his God can't really do anything. His God, they judge the God by the nation. So if we're weak and we're downtrodden, so like, they may know that we talk about God, but whatever. Let's talk all you want. It's all just talk. I guess that's his point, right? It's like, which is, you know, I guess we were saying it's like they don't know about it. But I guess his point is not, everyone always knows about the Jews. The Jews just know. But he's known... as no one cares. If he's downtrodden, then yeah, what do you know? You're saying is your God is the creator of the universe and all that. Okay, but bottom line is look at you guys. You guys don't know the Holocaust, so what's your God? It doesn't talk to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so it's like open question on our claim. Our claim is that this is the real God. So why are you guys so downtrodden, right? If we're strong and we're up, then we say, hey, look at that. But if we're down, then you know, no one's listening, no one cares. Especially when we go from a state of up to down, then they say, ah, we defeated their God. I mean, that's, you know. Right. Okay. I hear your point. He's bringing out, I think, a further aspect of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So he's saying is, then he says, when we go on the right path and we do the mitzvah, so we could cause our continued existence. Okay, which he's not spelling out exactly how. But it could be through God protecting us, or it could be through naturally, where, so he doesn't say. And he says, but he does, actually it does seem that, because he says, when we do the opposite, then it causes silik shchina. So silik shchina and removal of galus. So it sounds like he's saying is like it causing us through the shchina, through like God's protection. Jew exists, continues to exist through God's protection. So far as we're living properly, we have that protection, and then the world will know that God. So far as we don't, then we're not going to have the protection, we're going to get thrown out, and then the world's not going to know that God. Right? Okay. So that's his first paragraph, which is the way we proceeded at first. Right? First, what does it mean about God is in Galus? you know, or whatever, God needs to be redeemed. And then, what's the general idea of the route towards, redeeming God, so to speak, through doing mitzvahs? Okay. There's the next paragraph, it's two paragraphs, the whole thing. Next paragraph is going to get into the three things. Okay? So I think it's part of what you can see from it is how he approaches the thing. You know, his approach, his order. He took that order as well. You know. Okay. So I guided the order. You know, you guys naturally went that way also, but I knew that he did that also. You know, he didn't get into the three things at all. Now he gets to it. Amrin kan Torah gmil sasadim et tefillah. So you see it says tefillah. Torah gmil sasadim et tefillah. But he's making it generic. Kihem kolim shloshes hachalakim shehem kol ha'avodah. Because they encompass the three portions which are all of avodah. Okay? Now he's talking. V'hem ha'peh v'halev v'hamaisem. The mouth, the heart, and the actions. Okay? The sev. Beficha is in your mouth, vavcha in your heart, la'asoso is your actions. So which ones do you think is which, before we go further? Which is the mouth, and which is your heart, and which is your actions?
Tefillah is the mouth, towards your path, is your leave, and your actions are
invisible. Okay, is that what you're going to say? The actions part is easy, right? Actions is definitely Gmilas HaSadim, right?
Yeah.
But which is the heart and which is the mouth? Because in both of them, they're using your mouth, right? And in both of them, you're kind of using your heart. It's not really clear, right?
Right. But I would say
Avodah
Shebalev is
Tefillah. Okay, right. Torah does call, right? Chazal say Avodah Shebalev is Tefillah, right? So the lev would be Tefillah and then the pat would be learning.
You're talking about
Tefillah B'Tibor. That's true. Okay, so let's see what he says. Right, it's a little tricky. So he says, "A Torah, Ugmilas Chasadim, Heim HaPeh, VeHamaisa." Okay, yeah, Tefillah he alev, Ugmoshe Karuav Olu Shibalev. Okay, Kimos Karuav Sefri Ulaavdo Zu Tefillah. Pasuk says Ulaavdo, the same as Tefillah. Oeinu Alavoda, maybe the Avoda in the Mikdash. Tam Lomar B'Chol Avchem B'Chol Avshtam Ulaavdo B'Chol Avchem B'Chol Avshtam in Kriyishma. How do you do avodah in your lev? Avodah is supposed to be action, service. What are you doing in your heart? How can you do avodah belev? He says, "Amatam alomar ulavdo zutfila." So it means zutfila. Tfila is the avodah shebelev. Okay, and he's going to explain. Ki v'hispalo hamispalel. Ki v'hispalo when you daven hamispalel tzarach lachavin daito. If that kavama ligmor v'libo. Ito and you have to conclude in your heart that from God is success and mercy. Rehu shalad bakal, and he rules over all. Lo yimna enu davar, and nothing can prevent him. Rehu levada hamaspik kol hatzrachim, and he alone provides for all needs. Shehu ha'adon yisparach levado ve'akal avado. He alone is the. Is the master, and we're all everyone else is his servants. Okay, so that's kind of long. Okay, we have to analyze that more piecemeal. That's the end of the piece. Okay, so what is he saying? He's saying is it's funny. He's at length about the tefillah. He doesn't talk about the other one much. So he says that avoda is the mouth. So the mouth is learning, right? Why is the mouth learning? It's funny, he's saying all of avodah is the mouth and the actions and the heart. It's like an interesting way of encapsulating avodah. Like what's the you don't have to understand exactly how that works. But
drushi.
Yeah, drushi it sounds like, right? So what does it mean learning is the mouth?
I was gonna say, like analyzing what it is the chavrusa, like coming up with like every possibility of them.
Right, with your mouth. So how is that? What does it mean that this is like the avodah of your mouth? Right, he's making it sound like this is one of the parts of avodah. It's the avodah of your mouth. It's the avodah of your mouth learning.
It's learning rather than using your mouth other ways.
Okay, it actually says, I think it's Rashi, it says v'dibarta bam. Right, So I think it's Rashi says, "Lo yeh ikar diborcha el abam." Your primary speech should just be in that in the right Torah. So it means that speech, you mean that you don't speak about other stuff. I mean, people speak; they just give it HR, right? We talk, right? We just express what's on our minds and we talk, talk, right? So we do. So we're going to talk about nonsense and whatever, you know, at best nonsense, at worst, you know, lashon hara and whatever, all kinds of other bad stuff. Or are you going to speak about ideas? Right? I mean, speech like directs our attention and our mind's eye to whatever we're talking about. What he's saying is that the mitzvah of the learning is like directing your speech, and like your focus of your attention towards God and towards ideas. Right? It's an interesting way of looking at it.
Yeah.
You know? The way you normally think of it, right? Saying there's an idea of being involved, involving your I think speech is, I mean, you have to compare it, I think, with your heart. Because, like, I think with your first thought was also good. It seems like to be your heart also. It's like an internal type of process. It's, you know, Kodun Chavrusa, we don't have to learn with Chavrusa. Like, learning have to be through speaking, right? Okay, so let's hold that for a second, right? Then what? Then there's a Maisim. It's like a Gelsasadu. And then there's your heart. So what's he saying, your heart? Hold of your heart. He says, if you daven, you have to have kavana, that everything is from God, your success and mercy, and he's the rules over all, and nothing prevents him, and he alone is a provider of all needs, everyone's his servant. What does he mean? Like, what's this idea of avodah of your life? Right? He's trying to explain, I guess, what it means that it's avodah of your life. What does your life mean?
Your like emotions.
Your emotions. Okay, good. So what does he mean? How does tefillah have avodah of your emotions?
I guess because it's just how you're involved in like putting your ego aside and recognizing who the master of the universe is.
Right. Okay. Right.
Like, forces the person to completely, like, reconsider who they, like, on an emotional level, like, who they are.
Right. Who they are, who provides for them,
what
their success is dependent upon. Right. Right, and your emotions, though. Right, like, in learning, it's not really your emotions. Learning is just ideas, right? It's just the intellect. And I guess the speech is tied in with your ideas, your intellectual, you know, your mind's eye.
Expression,
but, see, in tefillah, see, learning isn't enough. Because, like, you kind of dichotomize. You know, you sit and learn, you get into the world of ideas, but your life and your energies, you have to involve your, you know, subordinate your feelings and your emotions. It has to hit you. It has to hit home. You may learn and know God is it. But when you feel, where are you going to get your money off my job and from everything? It's just, you know, the world of your emotions or the physical reality which you face. So a person has to, so to speak, bring God down to his emotional world. It has to impact his emotions. And through asking of God, you're realizing God is the one who could provide, he's able to provide, he's involved with man. So you kind of, you're making the conclusions of your mind and you're bringing it to your emotions and you're trying to make it hit home. That's what you're doing in tefillah, by asking God for all these different things. So you're kind of saying, oh, this area of my life, that I depend upon God. This area of life, that, you know, all these, you're going through all your personal emotional needs and bringing God into them. You know, so realizing, subordinating all your wishes and hopes and desires, you know, plans to God. So that's, tefillah involves your emotions, involves all your needs, right? Learning doesn't. Learning is just in the world of ideas. It's a thing about yourself. It's not about yourself. Learning is forget yourself. So the person is going to have one of learning and start thinking, well, this reminds me of the way I feel when I mean, that's like, the real learning is when you remove yourself from that type of thinking and you're involved in totally transcend the personal emotions. You know, that's not what learning. It's not about your personal emotions, unless you're studying your personal emotions. But that's in general is more abstract than that. But tefillah is. Tefillah is not just, let's learn a sugya about tefillah. Tefillah is my needs. I want this, I need this. I have a sick person in my house, I need money, I need this. Whatever it is. It's involving in our needs. And so that's the avodah of your lev, of your heart. You're getting your heart in line with the ideas of God. The learning is just is like your mouth and your it seems like your mouth is tied with your mind. It's like in fact, how does it go? I think maybe that's Ruach Atzel El Kim. I think maybe Unklus calls it like Ruach Mamala, like a speaking spirit. The mind and speech are very tied together. Speech is an expression of your mind. The idea of like directing your speech, but your speech being about Torah is your mind's eye, your mind being about Torah, because you speak what's on your mind, you know? So that's an idea, is like you have to subordinate your mind. What are you thinking about? Forget your emotions. Your emotions are a different thing, how you feel, but what are you involving your mind in? What are you speaking? What are you talking about? That's another part of Avodah. It's just an engaging yourself, your energies and your mind's eye on learning, on God. And then avodah, I mean meisin is gemilas chasadim, which means that what's the idea of what's that idea? Why do you need that? Gemilas chasadim and meisin.
And that's your behavior.
Right. No, exactly. But we act. Right? You don't just sit back and feel and think. But we're acting. We're people who, being people, we live in the world and we have bodies and we act and we go out into the world and we interact and with people. So our actions have to also be subordinate to God. It's not enough just to think and feel about God. But how do we act? We're going to be acting. So there's an idea that that also has to be subordinate to God. So our actions. And there's an idea of mitzvahs in general. Mitzvahs sometimes are in the world. But ma'aseh ha-mitzvah in general is that we do act and we're moved by what we act. And our actions direct our energies towards whatever it is that we're acting with. So our actions should be expressions of our mind's conclusions of Midas Hashem and Chesed and Tzedakah and Mishpat. So it's like the totality of your avodah is these different facets of our existence. It's like our mind and our speech, which is an expression of our minds, and like there's how we act, not just when we think in our mind, the abstract, but how we act. And then there's like we're bringing home to our emotions and tefillah. So it's like these three things encompass like the full system of like this Hashem. And all mitzvahs could somehow come under these things, right? In some form or other. All the perfections in Torah. So he's saying is that a person who embodies all of these, that they totally subordinate all of their whole life, all their different areas, Avodas Hashem, that's what brings us towards that's what brings Kal Yisrael and towards Ashka and Ashkacha, and ultimately leads to this idea of redeeming God from the nations of the world. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So one thing we didn't explain is he didn't explain, but we didn't explain either, is this thing of like the tefillah, the tzibor, shachas, minchamayev, right? What's that? Because like you said, he says, I'm under belay, why are you talking about? Seems like almost against what he's saying. If the whole thing of avodah is about the lev, tefillah, it's because the lev, your internal emotional perfection. Why is he talking about davening in shul three times a day? Why is he not talking about that? You know, see what you think, it's a personal tefillah. That's what it's about. What does that have anything to do with? You know,
I don't know. Maybe it's like what you said before. You said that's like the highest form of tefillah. Because Then, if a person is, if done properly, then they're. on the part of on behalf of the tzibor is a strong expression of how he has learned to put himself aside and not look at himself as like a
right. I mean, it's just part of the highest part level of tefillah.
Yeah.
Right. That's good. But I think he also says one other thing. Is he says, "Hu levado hamasvik kol hatzrachim." He alone is. Supplies all tzrachim. Shu Adon Yisparach Levada veHakol Avada. If he alone is the master, and everyone is his servants, there's a certain expression like of Tefillah Tzibor. We all are in need of God. It's not just like I have my need, but the whatever, they do their things. Like the experience of as a group, as a tzibur, all turning to God and saying, we are needy and we're turning to God, is part of what helps a person subordinate himself to God. Emotionally, it moves a person emotionally. It's like, yeah, I ask God, but if everybody, and we're all saying, Avinu Malkeinu, help us, you know, it's like we realize that here we are, a group of people, and a group of people usually feels empowered, and we feel strong. And here is, we're saying, is we're all your servants, we all need help, we can't do anything, you know? So it's part of the emotions, of moving your emotions and supporting your emotions. In davening by yourself, you almost feel special. You could kind of, you know, raise yourself up and feel like I have a special place by God. Or, you know, like, the experience of davening with Tzibur lowers the self and makes you realize how, even with the whole group, we're begging of God and we're weak and we're, you know? So it could be like in line with what you're saying. It's just, it's not really the idea about the Shachas Mechavar, but once he's talking about the thing, he's expressing the idea, the tefillah on the highest level, because that's the highest level of the life. And it could be also the idea of always Shachas Mechavar. If it's like, person's, first of all, emotionally, you always regress and you always forget about God, so you have to constantly be doing it. And that's part of the emotions. The way you get your emotions is by the constancy. You know, I'm always in need. At all times of the day, I'm always turning to God, I'm always needy for God. It's part of the way you hit your emotions, in a constant way and in a mass, you know, in a bigger public type of way. You know, but not because the public isn't. The main idea, Rashba's only, at least, is the internal. But these are just facets of what makes the internal stronger. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So this is good. Alright, interesting. And so I think we did a good job on the first part. I don't think we could have done these three things. You know, I mean, he's really like giving a whole, you know, perspective. But it's a very interesting perspective. It's an interesting way to think of what we're doing. You know, what are we trying to do? You could summarize our pursuit of perfection insofar as like our actions. We act properly in line with good ideas. We think and we direct our speak and our energies are involved in that. And then our emotions. We got to bring it home to our emotions. You know, it's like, sometimes, like, a good list of different things helps us, you know. You know, there's 630 mitzvahs, but there's, like, three categories. So it kind of helps us keep focused.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Any questions? Okay, good. So we're done with this one. I guess next week we'll try, you know, try the phone or whatever. Okay?
Mm-hmm.